Thank you very much. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Norbert Steiner speaking. I welcome you to the K+S Q2 conference call, and I'm joined with Mr. Christian Herrmann, the head of our investor relations, who will support me. I assume, no, I'm sure you already had a chance to study today's published interim report, but I would like to give you some highlights and information on our Q2 results. With soft commodity stock levels, historical lows, and prices at our or near their all-time highs, farm economics around the globe have substantially improved. A rising world population, shrinking arable land per capita, changing dietary patterns towards proteins, and the global trend to strengthen bioenergy will keep soft commodity demand up for years, if not decades. Looking at the low producer stock levels and the high hurdles to expand potash capacities, one can be very happy to be a part of the potash world. In May, the Canadian and Russian producers agreed with their Indian customers on a price increase of $50 per ton, resulting in a price of $270 per ton. This agreement, which indicated the tense supply situation for potash fertilizers, formed the basis for further price announcements. In Southeast Asia, we already are talking about $330 starting from the 1st of October, while also in Brazil, prices beyond $300 were announced. In Europe, after the price level for granular potash was initially increased by €12, a further increase by €8 was implemented. The price for standard potash fertilizers was even increased by €25 for the second half of the year. Nevertheless, this still leaves room for further price increases. But there is also a catch. Overseas freight rates have gone up by more than 50% since the beginning of the year, no matter what index you choose. And currencies like the Canadian dollar and, to a lesser extent, the euro have both markedly appreciated against the US dollar. While Fertiva also benefited from strong fertilizer demand at very attractive prices, Compo had to cope with rather bad weather and stiff competition in France. In Q2, a shift to private label products took their toll on margins as well. With regards to salt, the unusually mild weather conditions at the beginning of the year still had an effect on our de-icing salt sales in Western Europe in the second quarter. I'm therefore quite pleased that the North American de-icing salt market benefited from a late onset of winter and thus could compensate for the decline in Europe. Apart from the described situation on the freight market, costs for energy increased moderately. Personnel costs in Q2 rose overproportionally by 7%, mainly due to the first-time consolidation of SPL and, of course, a collective agreement pay rise in Germany effective since August 2006. Let's continue by taking a look at the change of K+S Group's revenues within the second quarter. Slide number two. Revenues increased by €79 million or 11% year-on-year. As you can see on the slide, the increase was mainly due to price effects in the fertilizer business, but it was also attributable by a large extent to the first-time consolidation of SPL. Together with slight volume increases, this could more than offset limited negative currency effects. With the average US dollar exchange rate at $1.35 per euro in the second quarter of this year, compared to 1.26 in Q2 2006, the negative currency effect on revenues amount to minus €13.6 million or 2%. The next table should only be understood as a rough indication how prices have developed. Factors like freight cost, exchange rate, product mix can distort the picture. Year on year, European prices increased 7%. And overseas prices in US terms by even 13%. Both are attributable to higher prices in all segments. In euro terms, the weaker US dollar exchange rate against the euro mitigated the strong rise in overseas prices. However, on EBIT level, our US dollar hedging enables us to compensate for these negative currency effects. Compared to the first quarter 2007, the European price level decreased by 2%, of course caused by a different product mix toward lower potash grade products, as well as the gliding price system. The latter is normal procedure to incentivize our customers to place post-season orders. Overseas price increases of 10% compared to the first quarter were attributable to higher prices, especially in Brazil, and a higher proportion of deliveries, including freight. We could start commenting on the key figures as follows. This is slide number 4. Most successful second quarter in the history of K+S, but you know us better, this is not our style. As explained, revenues rose by 11% to just under 780 million euro because of higher prices, higher sales volumes and consolidation effects. Operating earnings increased even stronger by 16%, mainly caused by a higher earnings contribution of the potash and magnesium business segment. Despite a weaker financial result, earnings per share reached 1.02 euro and were thus up 7%. Capital expenditure fell by approximately 4 million euro. However, this decline is only of temporary nature, since we expect a higher capital expenditures for the full year compared to last year. Main projects are the, for example, the new loading device at the SPL harbor, replacement and expansion of the underground infrastructure, and the creation of new storage capacities in Hamburg. The financial result, at minus 6.3 million euro, the financial result for the second quarter was, as expected, down by 6.1 million euro on the same period last year. As you can see on this chart, the decrease was mainly caused by higher interest expense resulting from the loan taken out to finance SPL acquisition, and the fact that last year's period benefited from one-off effects, the sale of one of our former Berlin companies. So where do we stand after the first 6 months? Well, revenues increased by 11% because of the consolidation and price factors. Operating earnings are on the same level as a year ago. That means we have succeeded in compensating for the low salt result in the first quarter. As regards adjusted group earnings after taxes, we are still lagging behind by 5%, since our financial result has to bear the financing charges connected to the SPL acquisition. As explained, we foresee capital expenditures to rise in 2007 markedly. Therefore, the number for the first 6 months rose as planned by 11%. Excluding acquisitions, the free cash flow reached 65 million euro in the first half and was thus down 40 million euro. These figures could be misleading because free cash flow was burdened by 84 million euro higher US dollar hedging premiums, while last year's figures benefited from a 38 million euro one-off sale of securities in connection with the financing of SPL. With about 740 million euro net indebtedness, including interest-bearing pension and mining provisions, the figure was nearly unchanged compared to last year. Putting the latest quarterly figures into perspective, it is quite obvious that K+S had a real good start into the year 2007, despite the unusually mild winter in Europe. The positive effects from the recently announced price increases for potash fertilizers all over the world are yet to impact our results from the second half of the year onwards. What brings me now to our outlook for the full year 2007. The tight supply and demand balance in global potash markets will result in significantly rising overseas and European prices in the second half of the year. For COMPO, we expect a tangible increase in revenues due to higher demand for consumer products and higher prices for professional products. Against this background, operating earnings should increase tangibly if raw material costs stay where they are. for Fertiva, with prices for nitrogenous fertilizers at all-time highs, revenues are expected to rise tangibly as well. Therefore, we expect operating earnings to reach last year's record results again. The salt business segment revenues should rise significantly this year as a result of the consolidation of the SBL activities over the whole year. Due to the sharp decrease in European de-icing salt sales in the first quarter, operating earnings will, however, fall tangibly short of last year's figure. This outlook is based, of course, on the assumption of a normal de-icing salt business in the fourth quarter in Europe and the United States. Some words about the expected development of selected cost items for 2007. We expect energy and personnel costs to rise moderately below 5%, while freight costs, due to the first-time consolidation of SBL for the entire year, should reach 530 million after 430 million the year before. During the last couple of weeks, we have adjusted our US dollar hedging, which cost us approximately 20 million euro. This brought the average exchange rate for 2007 from 104 to 108 US dollar per euro. The new structure already foresees an automatic adjustment at a spot rate at 140 US dollar per euro, eventually lifting the hedging rate from 108 to 112 US dollar per euro in the worst case. Therefore, our outlook includes a further payment in the low double-digit million euro range for possible follow-up hedging that we might not necessarily need. And under these circumstances, we anticipate a tangible rise in revenues for the group this year and operating earnings between 12 and 17% better than last year. And it would be another record year for the K+S group. This, more or less, is the end of my remarks. Thank you for listening so far. And now, Christian Herrmann and myself are happy to answer your questions. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. If any participant would like to ask a question, please press the star followed by the 1 on your telephone. If you wish to cancel this request, please press the star followed by the 2. Your questions will be pulled in the order they are received. There will be a short pause whilst participants register for a question. The first question comes from Martin Rudiger. Please state your question followed by your company name.
Yes, hello, this is Martin Rudiger from Chevreux. I have actually 4 questions, 2 related to the potash fertilizer segment and 2 related to COMPO. I start with potash questions. What is the price level of potash fertilizers which hurts farmers so much that demand is affected negatively? And the second, what is the biggest threat for the potash fertilizer prices you see? And for COMPO, we have seen that the EBIT was down in the second quarter, also due to mix effects. Can you give us a feeling what is the margin gap between the consumer business at COMPO and the professional business COMPO? And the final question, also related to COMPO, is you mentioned the tough competitive environment in France. I think this we had already seen at the end of last year. When do you expect this tough environment in France to end?
Okay. Thank you for the question. I start with the potash questions. Number one, price limits that disencourage farmers to buy fertilizers anymore. I think as long as we have that trend, the price trend for the production of the soft commodities, I think there is no real limit because of the fact that still as of today, I think the portion of cost that is related to the fertilizer business is between, let's say, 10 to 12%. So it is still very moderate compared to the burden that a farmer would face if he rejects or if he does not apply the necessary fertilizer volume to get the optimum crop. So I think this is nothing which should make us too much afraid of. This is at least not the biggest threat. And the biggest threat, this was your second question connected with the potash business, still is that one of the few participants in the market could be a little bit crazy and could think that he should go to other markets, compared to those where he is very powerful, and undercuts prices in a region where he should not be, or he would not be, he was not in the past, and just for no reason. So as of today, all the potash producers around the world have a lot to do in order to cope with the demand coming from the industry and coming from the agricultural sector. So as long as this is the case, I see no real threat which could stem from the behavior of the participants of the supplier side. And you have certainly seen the behavior that was presented in the first half of 2006 when we had that Chinese open question, and you have seen how deliberately and clever the producer side have reacted in those, I would not say dramatic, but difficult days. So I think from today's perspective, also from the midterm and long-term perspective, I cannot see any threats to the market. With respect to COMPO, your third and fourth question. The last one, the competitive environment in France is tough. There is one big competitor that tries to push aside COMPO. And as we think that the French market, in particular on the consumer business, is a very important one for us, we cannot say, well, we bear everything that this strong competitor, having its main offices in the United States, is doing there. So this probably will last for a certain period of time. And to be open, this has happened in the past several times before. We have not started that that struggle. And in the moment where our main competitor sees that his calculation will not fit, then I'm quite optimistic that he will change his policy and try to get back to us again. On the other hand, there are a lot of smaller producers in several markets and also in France, and probably it helps a little bit to consolidate the market. But once again, we are not the one that started that struggle, but we have to react in order to defend our position there, and this is sometimes connected with some pressure on our margins there. The EBIT was therefore down for a certain situation. However, we expect that the COMPO business will be tangibly better, and so we should look to the third and to the fourth quarter, where we should be in that position and that situation where we expect COMPO to be. Beyond 30, like we have indicated already, and based both on the first results on our plant protection products stemming from the cooperation with Syngenta, the rest of the consumer business, and also in particular the professional line of COMPO. So I think this is something where we should not be too much depressed. COMPO is on a good path. Was that okay?
The next question comes from Matthias Pfeifenberger. Please state your company name, followed by your question.
Hello, Matthias Pfeifenberger from Deutsche. Good afternoon, gentlemen. A few questions. Since the move in standard of 25 euros needs to be followed by granular, there's 5 euros missing, but rumors say you could be negotiating price increases at the level of up to 25 euros. So 5 euros. To 25 years, what does it depend on? Do you have a feeling what might turn out? And also, you mentioned on your rehatching, you adjusted the follow-up hedging on an automatic basis? Does it mean that once the euro hits 140, double-digit amount will become due instantly, or will you already rehedge at the level prior to 140 because your options might be already almost worthless by then? Thanks.
Start with the latter one. The hedging automatism means that as soon as we touch the 140, our hedging will jump up to 142, 130, 143 for the rest of the year, and a certain payment becomes due. On the other hand, we have set up a mixture with so-called one-touch options, which granted us a certain payback from the banks, and this is split into six pieces for the rest of the month. Should the dollar stay where it is, or should the dollar not touch the 140 level, then the rest of our reserve that we have set up gets free and, of course, contributes to our earning situations in the EBIT1 level. And there was some disturbance on the line from your first question. If I understood the question correctly, you asked whether we have the chance to increase our prices for standard or for granular?
It's at least said that you could be negotiating price increases of up to 25.
Yeah, this is a rumor coming from somewhere in the market, but to be a little bit political, I would say I would not exclude that we materialize that rumor, but I would not comment on the 25. I think this is a little bit too high. Realistically, it will be a two-digit figure, but we have to see the outcome of that deliberations, which will certainly be out in the market within the next 4 to 6 weeks.
Thank you.
So there is an upside potential. This is quite realistic.
Yeah.
Thank you, sir. The next question is coming from Andreas Heine. Please state your company name, followed by your question.
Hello, this is Andreas Heine from UniCredit HVB. At first on potash. You were referring for a former question that the prices, the cost for fertilizer for farmers is only in the magnitude of 10 to 12%. Looking forward, as the market for potash is still very tight and might become even tighter if the growth is once again in the magnitude of 3 to 4% next year, would you assume then that it would be possible and accepted by the farmers that the price increases another $100 per ton? Just as the power is now more from the at the producer side rather than on the farmer side. First question. And the second on the potash business, could you please elaborate a little bit what you see for 2008 as an increase in costs in the different areas? So what is the impact on energies and what you have on personal costs and what we have to expect in general as a cost inflation for next year, also given that freight rates seem to go up as well. And some smaller questions on the financials. You have reduced your CapEx guidance a little bit. Are these reductions delayed to 2009, or do you have saved this amount? And secondly, what was the reason why the pension interest in this specific quarter was lower than expected? And we, last but not least, we have heard from some other companies they have to capitalize some of the deferred tax in a different manner due to the change in the tax regime in Germany. Is there something similar we have to expect for K+S in Q3? These are my questions.
Okay, a lot of different questions. I have to make a note on the last one. Potash price increase is the first question. Some of our competitors really are of the opinion that, to be a little ironic, that the sky is the limit for further increases in prices. We have seen a price increase in 2008, which was magnificent. And what I always try to bring over is that one should not treat the customers too let's say, too dramatically too powerful, as someday there might be a point of time where the people think, well, I need the product, but I do not want to pay that price anymore. So it's more on the psychological side than on the, let's say, economic deliberation side. So I think we should be optimistic that further price increases will come due, will be materialized next year. But it's not in our hand alone how much this increase will be. So what we should be able to do should be to more than overcompensate the costs that we see next year, generally. But I would not dare to predict that 100% or $100 further increase in 2008 would be realistic. I think if you ask around in the potash world, from Potash Corporation to Uralkali, nobody really can give you or is able to give you a more precise answer on that. Mm-hmm. What we see on the cost side next year is also something which is a little bit early to answer specifically. What I would assume in 2008, talking about the potash division in particular, is that the main cost issue, personal cost, should rise. But I would hope that since all these operations are located in Germany, that we will be in a moderate sector. All the increases in salaries that we have seen over the year will be below 5% in the average. So I would say we should even hope that our increase in salaries is even less than 5%, significantly less than 5%. The second issue on the cost side, transportation cost should rise significantly generally. However, we have long-term contracts for our main overseas market, Brazil, South America, where we should be much better off than our competitors. And you know that also the container services are under pressure, that the shipping lines that are doing the container business are complaining about that. So I also would say that there is not that big increase in costs. But once again, I would not dare to say this is 5% or 3% or 8%. And last but not least, energy is something which really nobody can predict. I hope that after we have had some increases in energy costs this year, the increase will not be too significantly. But I would say, from my perspective as of today, since we did not have seen our planning results for 2008, I would not dare to give you a more precise answer. But it should not explode too much. With respect to the financials, your third question, we have, you are right, decreased the figure for our CapEx from, I would say, from 200 something to 185. This is connected with the fact that we were planning to acquire two new ships for our Empremar shipping line in Chile, and due to the price development and other unforeseen circumstances, we will not be able, or we will most likely not acquire these two ships in 2007 anymore. They are postponed definitely to 2008 or 2009, so it should be on your agenda also for the future. Mm-hmm. But I think we need to be very tough if we would be in a position to make the 185. So I would say there is a certain downward trend from that as well. Mm-hmm. And the last question pertaining to the tax regime connected with the deferred taxes. Yes, we foresee a certain trend on that also at the third quarter, but I would say this is a little bit below 10 million euro in the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
Nevertheless, now we have that so-called tax reform, and it will also we as KFOS will benefit significantly. I think we will have a average tax rate below 30 in 2008 onwards. So it's a good step forward for us.
Maybe I add to this, the deferred tax impact in Q3, is that a positive or a negative 10 million?
Positive.
Mm. And could you please highlight once again this pension interest? Why were they below what I've seen in recent quarters?
Yeah. You know that we have followed the path to finance our pensions via contractual trust agreements, and we have feeded that system twice in 2005 and 2006, and of course this materializes also in a lower interest rate on that.
So that's going forward on that level of only 0.3?
This 80 million, 85 million that we have put into our CTA is a portion which will, for a longer period of time, I should put it different. We have now 116, I think, around in the pension or still. And since these 85 million were put in that CTA, a lower interest on that will be our future as well. But I would not say this is premature for this year. We will feed the CTA again.
Mm-hmm.
And shouldn't we not feed the CTA, and as the pension obligations do not rise significantly anymore due to the fact that the system is closed and no new people are in a position to get pensions out of that in the future, the interest on that should stay stable, if not decrease slightly, until we feed that CTA for the next time. But we have not decided that for 2007.
But Andreas, just to add here, that the Q2 figure is a bit understated since we had a very high Q1 figure. So the half-year figure is with 2 million reliable, and therefore also we should use the half-year figure to estimate the full-year amount of pension interest, which is roughly 4 million. So the 4 million interest figure will go ahead.
Mm-hmm. 4 million total year?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. The next question is coming from Christian Faitz. Please state your company name followed by your question.
Yes, thanks. Christian Faitz from Oppenheim. I just have two questions on Compo again. Can you describe how much of the division sales are actually generated in France? And then in terms of your currency gains of some 22 million, 22.4 to be exact, how would those be distributed across the divisions? Thank you.
The last question, please, again. Mr. Faitz? Could you repeat the second question again?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah, can you hear you?
Okay, thank you. The 22.4 million in the second quarter in terms of currency gains, which you have in your EBIT 1, how would those be distributed over the divisions, especially in Compo and, in potash and magnesium and salt? Thanks.
So, I was a little bit confused because you mentioned two questions on Compo, so there was a misunderstanding on my side. Compo in France, do we have the figure here available?
Yeah, we have the figure. Just to last year we had a good 100 million euro revenues in France for the total Compo business, and this year we expect the figure to be slightly higher than last year. And if you ask us for the split between consumer and professional business, you should estimate, I would say, 70% is consumer and 30% professional. Is that okay?
Yes, thanks.
Okay.
Second question, the currency gains that you have taken from our presentation. We have the 22.4 million will be more or less something which is to the extent of 15-16 million, I would say, attributable to the potash division, and the rest is more or less entirely something connected with the salt business.
Okay, great, thank you.
Because we have we have started some hedging policies also connected with our SPL business, and this is something that has materialized in the second half, in the second quarter of 2007. This was concentrated on that quarter, and the rest of the year should more or less what we anticipate, expect entirely be dedicated to the potash division.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, sir. The next question is coming from Saul Rance. Please state your company name followed by your question.
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen. Saul Rance from Dresdner Kleinwort. I have two questions, both of them relating to the potash business. First of all, could you just confirm, I know you've provided indications in your up-to-date investor presentation for the current price levels that you're seeing in your main regional markets in Europe, Latin America, and sort of rest of the world, Asia. Can you just confirm that those prices are the ones that you have used to calculate your earnings guidance for the group for the full year? And then my second question is regarding freight costs. You've given us guidance for the full year for the whole group for freight costs, including the effect of full year consolidation of SPL. Would it be possible to clarify what you're expecting for the full year this year for freight costs for the potash division compared with last year? Thank you.
First question, yes, we can confirm. We utilize these figures for the outlook of the year, and the freight cost in potash division is about where do we are here? About 200, let's say roughly 250 million. 250 out of that 530.
And what would that have been for 2006, please?
Roughly 2 or 3% higher.
Sorry, the freight cost increase in the potash business that you expect for the current year is an increase of only about 2 or 3%.
This is correct.
Yeah, 4 to 5. Let's say 4 to 5.
Four to 5.
Yeah.
We needed to calculate a little bit.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. The next question comes from Richard Schramm. Please state your company name followed by your question.
Yes, good afternoon. Gentlemen, one follow-up on this question concerning the result from the currency. You said that around about 15 or 16 million of Q2 positive were attributable to potash and magnesium. If we would strip this out from the posted results, then not too much of the operating improvement would be left for, let's say, the real performance coming from volume and prices. But if you look, if I look to the figures you have given for volume and price increase, which totals sum up to an 8% increase or so, I'm a bit amazed that this figure is not stronger. What is the reason behind this? Is it a kind of product mix effect, or what is diluting here this trend? Thank you.
First of all, we mentioned that there are some changes in the product mix, that we have higher sales of products that have a lesser K2O content, potash content, and therefore our price-wise a little bit lower. Second, this was mentioned by me in my additional remarks. We have that sliding system that we intensify our customers to increase their orders in order to produce on a higher level and fill their stocks. The third issue is that the spot rate that we have here to compare with the situation before was weaker. We had 126 in the year before, and now we have 135, and this also takes its toll. And this is also something which we have to assess and to apply for the evaluation of our receivables. And last but not least, I can only repeat what we always try to bring over. All the potash producers worldwide, more or less, are located in currencies, in situations and in regions with different currency to the US dollar, Canadian dollar, euro, ruble, and everybody has the problem to convert the US dollar revenues into their home currency. So this is something which we did and probably have just inserted years ago already our hedging system. So this is something which is connected with the business and therefore has to be seen always together with the operating efforts of our people in the specific markets. People know that we have these hedging systems in place, since we do that, as you know, forward 3 years in advance, and the people know what they can do. And of course, they have in their mind when they discuss prices with the customers in overseas markets that they can trust on our hedging situation and will bring something back in dollars, which is different from that what they contribute to our earnings in euro. So this is always a little bit of a philosophical question that you have raised. But this is the way like we see it, and this is the way in particular like our sales people act in the market. And therefore, I would not like to divide our results and our results and our EBIT contributions into pieces or even more pieces. So I'm a little bit philosophically of a different opinion than was put forward with your question.
Okay, thank you. And one clarification also, you mentioned that you have spent some 20 million euros on additional hedging, but if I understood you right, the upper bandwidth of your options is still at 1.40. Is this correct, or did I take this wrong?
It's a little bit, it's correct and incorrect in one point of time. The knockout for our, let's say, double barrier options, meanwhile, is at 142, 143. However, as we're very close to the point of time where the first options would be needed to execute, this is something which is comparably expensive. And the farther you are away from the point of time where you want to execute your options, the cheaper it is. And therefore, we adapted our hedging, let's say, instrument and brought so-called one-touch options in place where we got some money back from the from our partner with, of course, the risk that we need to pay to him a higher amount of money should this level of 140 be touched. This is the touch of the one touch option, and we have split that instrument like we did all the hedgings in monthly parts and portions, and therefore as long as the dollar does not hit the 140 level, neither our hedging in general nor the so-called one touch options will be under pressure. And the longer the year goes on, and should the 140 threshold not be broken with respect to the one-touch options, not with the hedging itself, we will be out of the risk. We will get out of the risk month by month. And this is the reserve which I mentioned in my initial remarks, which is a two-digit million euro figure. And should we be in a situation today, we are below 136. At the end of August already, then a part of that reserve will be available to contribute to our EBIT. So it is a little bit more complicated than in the past, but these combinations of the two instruments made it cheaper in that very short period of time that was still open from the first option to, let's say, to fall, if the 140 would have been broken, and the amendment of our hedging.
And just to add and just to clarify on that, our outlook assumes that the dollar will break the 140 level. Our outlook assumes a further re-hedging amount, as Mr. Steiner said, in a low double-digit figure. So this is already included in the figure of 310 and 325. If we don't need this, if we don't see the 140 to break, then our outlook would be higher by this reserve.
Thank you very much for this.
Okay.
Thank you, sir. The next question comes from Thomas Svoboda. Please state your company name followed by your question.
Thomas Svoboda from MainFirst. Good afternoon. I have one follow-up question on potash prices in Europe. I was wondering why the prices in Europe for potash products in average were lower in the second quarter compared to the first quarter. Is this the product diversification effect?
The two effects which I mentioned were there. We have different products which we have sold in Europe. These are products that contain a lower potash grade. And the second issue that contributed more or less significantly to that was this sliding price system that we say, well, if you buy and take volumes that you need for the end of the year or already for next season, we sell it to a cheaper price to you than compared to the situation if you buy that in September, October, or even the next year. So this is something which is absolutely normal in that fertilizer business in general and not abnormal in K+S or in particular in the potash division. This is something which you see in Fertiva. This is something what you see also in the salt business starting more or less in normal years in the third quarter. So this is more or less the explanation for that, what happened in the pricing situation in Europe in the second quarter.
Okay, thank you.
What happened last year?
The same effect Christian mentioned that happened already last year in the second quarter. So, and this is something which will most likely show up in the second quarter 08 as well.
Thank
General
you.
Behavior.
One additional question, if I may. Could you give us an update on the capacity extension in potash you planning?
This is something which is still going on. I mentioned, and this is something which has been published from us already a month ago. As you see, and as you know, we are looking for some place around the world which would give us access to, or which would then be the basis for a greenfield activity. This is nothing which is so, let's say, comparably easy to do, like the bottlenecking measure which has been announced by PCS and Mosaic and the other American producers sometimes in the last couple of months. And this makes out the difference and the difficulty connected with that, that you are faced with questions and situations that does not allow to say you now in the next fortnight or the next month we are able to come out with the communication to say, now we start. So since this is the background of that, we have said that we are quite optimistic to be able to communicate something on that within 2007 still. So I'm still optimistic on that, but it is sometimes beyond our control. It's sometimes also beyond the control of our potential partners. We do our very, very best on that because we are not quite satisfied to still be limited with our 8 million ton exposure that we have. We would really like very much to say this is something where we'll start, and this is something where we will contribute to the, let's say, satisfaction of the demand beyond 2012 or 13. But I must ask you for a little bit of patience.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. The next question comes from Marco Mondani. Please state your company name followed by your question.
Hi, I'm calling from Marcos Capital in Lugano. Most of my questions have been answered, but just a very quick point on the additional cost that you're having, the 20 million for the change in the structure of the hedging that you explained before, and a potential single-digit amount additional on top of that that you mentioned as well if the dollar was to go above 140. Are these charges one-off in nature? Should they disappear the year after, independently of the dollar, or are they going to repeat? Thanks a lot.
To be open, you never know, because you do not know about the development of the U.S. dollar. You know that we are fixing the dollar more or less 3 years in advance with a certain additional volume that we see that the corridor should not be, or the upper or the lower knockout barrier should not be broken by the development of the U.S. dollar. But the dollar moves, and you cannot be sure whether it moves so quickly that it is quicker than you had anticipated 3 years in advance. And if you look to our presentations and see our slides describing our hedging transaction, you can clearly see that we have amended our barriers in the past from time to time, and this cannot be excluded from the future as well. So,
Sorry, if I change the question slightly, sorry if they're interrupting, if the dollar stayed where it is, these 20 million that you are incurring.
Probably a misunderstanding from my side. If nothing would happen, if the dollar would be flat, 136 something, we would not have to do something again until the end of the first half year 2010, period. Everything, including the cash which has been taken to generate these future savings and earnings, there would nothing be to be added.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, sir. We have a follow-up question from Mr. Martin Rüdiger. Please state your question.
Yes. A question on clarification based on an earlier question.
On what, please?
It was on one analyst has also asked a question concerning the guidance, and I would like to go a little bit more in details on that. Is in your guidance for 2007 already included the current price increase in Europe we see during this week? And are there potential further price increases in potash fertilizers included in the course of the year 2007 in your guidance?
Okay, I just answer this very quickly. The rumor about a new price increase in Europe, we said as of the 1st of September or 1st of October, what Mr. Steiner already described as very likely in a two-digit figure, is so far not included in our guidance. But don't forget that the corresponding volume in 2007 behind that granular MOP is very low, and therefore it would not have a significant effect on our guidance. Certainly for 2008, not for 2007.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. We have a follow-up question from Mr. Andreas Heiner. Please state your question.
I'd like to come back once again on this intensification of large customers to order very early. Could you explain what the idea is behind this if the market is very tight? Because you give some of your of your margin away for a certainty you do not need, but the customer needs, because he might don't get the material if he doesn't order it. And you have reduced, as far as I know, during this year, also the payment terms in Brazil from 360 days to 180 days, which goes in the same direction. So is it possible to reduce this incentivation, given the fact that it is more the customer who should be scared getting the material rather than you? And talking about this additional capacity, there are not many projects which are under negotiation or under analysis. Are you in strong relationship with one or the other of these potential new mine engineers, or is it just a loose conversation?
The first question. This is something which, of course, is something like a habit in the fertilizer markets, and also in other markets, like I mentioned, in the salt market. Number two, it doesn't pertain to any. To every product, only to a certain part of the product. Mm-hmm. And it should contribute to the fact that you want to hold your production on a very stable and high level. And it should, wipe out a little bit the seasonality of the demand within your main markets. If we would only produce along the requirements of our customers, we would then need to produce to be able to have, let's say, 4 million tons available at the beginning of the spring season. I just make it a little bit simple, more simple than it is, and the second 4 million volume at the end of the year. So you have then turn up, produce at 150% of your capacity, which you do not have, and then go down to 50%. And this is the reason. And it helps us very much to have that production flat on that high level. And this is something which the customers know. And therefore, they, despite the fact that we are not under pressure in the market, it is in your own interest to go that road down, because it helps you to reduce cost of production.
Mm-hmm.
And the second issue, only those, talks at with potential partners. I am a little bit worried about your question, in so far as you mentioned quite abstractly some projects that are being discussed. So, in order to answer your question precisely, of which projects are you thinking?
Well, there's one at Rio Tinto, I think. Then it's one at BHP, which is under negotiations, and one, well, which is rumored for years in Thailand. This is at least these I'm aware of, but maybe there are more that I do not know, but there are probably not very many going ahead. So it's not that... I'm aware of that there are dozens around, and yet you just can pick whatever you want.
All
of these projects have a time horizon of at least 5 years.
The horizon is absolutely correct, and this is something which we always have communicated, that should we start now, it would be available for production in 2014 or 13 or so. So the time horizon is still the same. But there are other projects, since the deposits of which we are talking are bigger than the licenses. Some old participants in the market and some new participants like BHP have acquired. So I have always said that we are looking for alternatives in the East and in the West. And you can believe me that the talks are very advanced. However, once again, it's not always in our own control what happens, and therefore one needs to be patient. But if you are in a situation to say, now we go ahead, then the story will follow, and we will contribute to the future of K+S in a very good way. But what I have learned during my years here in K+S, not only being a member of the board, in such a situation you need to be patient. And this is the difference, since we said that we are not looking for increase of capacity in Germany anymore. In the neighborhood of our existing mines, it is a little bit more complicated compared to our competitors from PCS and Mosaic that more or less utilize the given infrastructure. So this is still the new, this would still be a very new potash production entity which is not on the market yet.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, it's difficult and different.
Thank you, sir. The next question comes from Niels Kroner. Please state your company name followed by your question.
Niels Kroner here at AKO Capital. One question about the average potash price you realize. If we just compare Q2 with Q2 last year, you show an average increase of 6.5% in the price per ton. And I was just wondering why that increase is relatively modest. Two factors. I mean, one, since last year we have seen massive increases in prices. And secondly, in the table you give for the hedged US dollar rates, the hedged rate in Q2 07 is more favorable than last year. I mean, spot prices have deteriorated, but the rate you've hedged in is about 8% in your favor. So I'm just a bit at a loss why we don't really see the really big price increases coming through here.
I'm a little bit confused insofar as I think that the price increases are not that low like you ask us to be. And this is something also connected with the exchange rate from US dollar to the euro, which has changed. We have increased our prices, but we have to convert it into dollar. Yeah?
Into euro.
And this is not, there is not taking into account our hedging situation, because this is something which comes beyond.
But isn't the realized price what you show in the revenue line, which then effectively is included in the average price you show on slide 3?
Yes. Yeah. I just want to kind of clarify on this. The prices and the revenue we show is the revenue where you have to take the dollar spot rate, not our hedging rate. This is revenues. Revenues is just separate from our hedging. Yeah. Hedging gains will be shown in the other operating income, just in the EBIT level, yeah, EBIT 1 level. So the prices you would see here is just the calculation of revenue divided by
volume.
That's all. Yeah. And what you can see here is what we have shown you in overseas prices in US dollar per ton. We have seen already in the second quarter, year on year, a price increase by of 13% and of 7% in Europe, which is, I think, quite remarkable. And the price rises we are talking about, they are just beginning, and they are getting effective in the second half of the year 2007. For example, also in Europe, we increased granular prices by 12 euro at the end of April, and it took us roughly 4 to 5 weeks before we could really factor these new prices in, because not only us, but the whole industry is working on a backlog of just 4 to 5 weeks. Since June, we are rationing our product to the customers. We cannot fulfill all the requests from our customers in time as they wanted to have the product. So it takes, announced price means wait another 4 to 5 weeks before the price can really be factored in. Okay? And please don't forget the US dollar. This is just the spot rate here on the table, not our hedging spot rate. Or hedging rate. Sorry. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, good.
Thank you, sir. Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star followed by the 1 on your telephone. To cancel this request, please press the star followed by the 2. The next question comes from Albert Jalema. Please state your company name followed by your question.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. This is Albert Jalema from CoCapital. I had a question regarding the hedging of the currencies. Because if I understand it correctly, and I take the presentation that you have on your website, for instance, on the average hedge rate for 2008, you've hedged 620 million, if I'm correct, at an average price at the lower barrier is 108 at the moment. So, but at your top line sales number, you use 620 million divided by the spot rate of next year. And for the, let's say, looking at your EBIT 1, you use this same number and then divide it by this 108.
Yeah.
So let's say if I assume that this 620 divided by 108 is 174, if I would use the spot rate of 135, that means that the difference between these two drops into your EBIT 1.
Correct.
So for next year, you're having a currency gain, if it stays within these boundaries, of 114.8 million. That's the difference between these two numbers.
Also depends on the spot rate.
But if I look at that, then it looks like that 25% of your EBIT 1, approximately, is related to currency gains. And yeah, of course, we had the discussion in the past that is it hedging or is it currency speculation? So I was wondering, do you have a clear view on currencies? Because the 140 that you have for the first half of next year seems to be rather tight. So do you take really a view on currencies, or how should I see that?
I know that you have participated in our discussions since the very beginning, and you have certainly followed my remarks to the question of Mr. Schramm. So this is what we, this is more or less the look that K+S has on the combination of operational business of the salespeople of our production entities and the support by our currency management. They are bound together. Of course, we do it in a little bit different way than our competitors, and also a little bit different from that what other companies in Germany might see and do on that special field of business. However, what we have done in the past was to adjust our barriers in case we needed to do so. And what we have done so far is not only, if you look to the latest presentation that we have on our website, we can only adjust the situation of 140 with respect to the remaining month of 2007. We also did that for the first half year of 2008. So our view to the dollar is quite simple. As long as it is inside the barriers, it's okay. And as the benefit from that connected with our operational business is quite substantial and quite helpful to produce a good result from our sales converted into euro, we are absolutely of the opinion not only that these two issues belong together, but that we are on the right side also with respect to the interest of our shareholders. Yeah, but so far, we have been able to maintain the dollar always within that barrier. And therefore, as long as when you look to the barrier and see for the first half year that we have shifted it to 144, the so-called upper knockout barrier, and 112 or so to the lower knockout barrier, our expectation is that the dollar is between those barriers, period.
So for next year, you in the first half, because the latest presentation on your website of July 07 was still referring to on the slide 110 to 140.
Oh, then we should have a new one as of today. So this is where I refer already to. Sorry.
Okay.
So if you look after our discussion here to our presentation, is it already on the website?
Yes.
I'm confirmed. And our investor relations team is on its way to the next meeting, so you can see what we did, and therefore we are not too much afraid of the development of the dollar as of today, since we have done something and we think that this, what we did, is sufficient. It might be that the dollar develops differently, then we still have reserves in 2007, and of course we can do something for 2008. But then we are absolutely far away from the spot rate, which for today in 2007 will be 135 or 134, and we have an average of 108 or so. So this is something which is significant and helpful.
And maybe just if the, let's say, for next year, and that's of course highly hypothetical because I'm not a currency, I don't have no clue where currencies will go. Mm-hmm. But if, let's say, if currencies, the dollar would depreciate even further, and you would get to a level of, let's say, 144, 145, then probably your barrier would also move up on the bottom end from 112 to 120, and on the upper end from 144 to 150 or so.
This is what we have done in the past, and if you look to the presentation that you have on your screen, mm-hmm. or which you have before your eyes,
yeah.
you can see what we did in the end of 2005 with that tiny steps forward and the increase of the lower knockout barrier. So this is something which seems to be a little bit exotic, but it always tries to combine mm-hmm. Security and cost reduction.
But if it would move to 120, the lower barrier next year, then yeah, 57 million of your EBIT would be at risk, and you have to buy new barrier options to adjust it. And
what did you say, 115 or 125? I do not know.
If 120. If I
120. So we are perfectly in line with that what we see, and nothing would happen. Of course, the difference between the spot rate and our hedged rate would decrease, no doubt about that. But then we have the result already in our revenues, and this is more or less the system of connecting tubes, give and take.
Okay. Other question. Your free cash flow estimate for this year, because first half was somewhat weaker, but I assume that for the full year you mentioned that you had some exceptional costs. Can you give an estimate for the full year on the free cash flow?
No. Premature.
Okay.
Clearly out of range, because it is connected with so many aspects that we cannot predict. This would be an estimate which I would not like to dare. No, sorry about that.
It's not within the 130 to 150 million range, which was mentioned to me before.
No comment on that. No comment on that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, sir. The next question comes from Miro Zuzak. Please state your company name and followed by your question.
Yes, hello, this is Miro Zuzak from RBR Capital. I have a question regarding the hedging. By the way you hedge the FX rate, you're actually selling volatility. That means that you speculate on low volatility of the FX rate. Now, I guess the bank that wants to sell you or that sells you the option wants to earn money with it, with the premium systematically. Now, what makes you so sure that the volatility is going to be low? And why do you think that you have an edge in estimating the dollar FX volatility?
I think this is something which we see as an opportunity that arises from the products that are offered by the banks, if I understand your question correctly. As long as somebody is on the other side accepting and offering hedging options like we have found in the past and what we have seen also for the future, we see that the volatility is of importance, no doubt about that. But still in the situation where the volatility was low or is low, we have found some partners to conclude that that products with us. Of course, you are right. The higher, the low volatility has two sides of the coin. Number one, the risk is lower than compared with the higher volatility. On the other hand, unfortunately, we have to pay higher premiums for the future. This has materialized in our cash situation as it is as of today. But from the question of the liquidity of the market, so far we don't have any bigger problems to place our desires to conclude options like we did for the future.
So if I've understood it right, every time you break through a barrier and you have to roll an option, this is a situation where the money wins, the bank wins money, and every time it stays within the barriers, then you win money.
I need to correct you. It is not connected with the breaking of the barriers. I tried to explain that so far we have had that instrument always under control, that no barriers have been broken by the development of the dollar, neither to the lower side nor to the higher side. What we need to do from time to time in the past is to adjust the barriers. And this is, of course, connected as we change our options connected with some payments to the banks, which in their calculation is includes volatility, includes time, includes the likelihood, and this is more or less volatility, the likelihood being the paying partner or the winning partner, and of course it is also connected with the prevailing spot rate, but it has nothing to do with the breaking of the barriers.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, sir. The next question comes from Gunnar Kors. Please state your company name, followed by your question.
Yeah, good afternoon, gentlemen. Only two small questions. Firstly, here on the tax rate for the whole year 07, could you give here us a number before the revaluation of tax assets and liabilities? And second question on your debt, or in particular on your financial debt, it has not really changed year over year, as you already mentioned. Looking into your cash flow statement, obviously there was also not much scope to improve it. Is it fair to assume that financial debt will decline in the second half of the year, or is it not really in your focus?
It's enough. Thank you for the question. To start with the second one, sorry. It's within our focus, but I would not predict whether we will go down or not. We are discussing that issue presently, and it is something which I would not predict where the outcome might be. The first question, tax rate for the end of the year?
For the full year.
For the full year, in this year, 2007, it's...
We're still sticking to 33%,
roughly.
Despite this deferred tax gain we expect in the third quarter, the reason why we still stick to 33% is because we expect higher earnings before taxes, and therefore a higher tax rate. So the higher earnings we expect will compensate for the, as Mr. Steiner said, 5 to 10 million extra gain in the third quarter. So please still stick to 33% for the full year 07. Was that clear, Gunnar?
This 33% now for 07 includes the revaluation of tax assets and liabilities.
Yeah, since with the better results that we in particular get from our German operations, we have higher tax payments, of course, on the higher tax rate compared to the average that we assumed to be at the beginning of the year. And therefore, it compensates. The ups and downs compensate.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. We have a follow-up question from Mr. Thomas Svoboda. Please state your question.
Thomas Swoboda, MainFirst. I have a follow-up question on the price development for potash and magnesium products in Europe. As you stated before, the change in the product mix will change the prices in Europe, also your strategy to give discounts for long-term orders will depress the prices. My question would be, how much of the price increases in Europe we should see netted in the long term in your results?
This are more or less developments of seasonal character. We see that we intensify these customers with that sliding price situation mostly and more or less entirely in those states where we want to maintain our high capacity utilization and high production rate. So that in times where we can produce and sell directly to our customers, it is not necessary. So this gliding price system is in the fertilizer world more or less an issue in the second and a little bit also in the third quarter. So this does not, let's say, this has already and always shown up in the past, also in 2006, also in 2005, and will show up in 2008. This is bringing down costs, and therefore I would not attribute too much. And the second issue, also these products with the lower potash grade, this is also something which is mainly of seasonal character, and it will not show up. It is not a trend down from the MOP to have a MOP of lesser potash content. So you should not care too much about that, but it is something which we needed to communicate when we talk about developments quarter on quarter. But it is not a new trend for K plus S to reduce K2O content or to roll out that gliding price system over the year, of the whole year. So it's not too much.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, sir. The next question comes from Tian Chan. Please state your company name followed by your question.
Hello, this is Chan from HSBC. I have two questions. The first question is regarding your potash overseas export supply. For your Brazil and Southeast Asia, will possible for you to specify, are they buying on the spot price or 6 months contract or 12 months contract? And if it's not spot price, when will be the resetting contract date? And the second question is about the country. There's a huge price gap between Chinese import price and Brazil and Southeast Asia and the rest of the world. I believe it's a $40 to $50 per ton. If in September Chinese going to accept substantial price increase, what's the impact on your Brazil and South Asia supply price? Thank you very much.
The potash world is very transparent, and if you look to the respective newspapers, journals, you see the development reported on over the entire world. So if the price in China would rise and would be accepted at a, whatever figure, this is a signal for the development of the prices. And the Chinese negotiations generally, you know, that take place in autumn. Sometimes they last long. Sometimes they come to a very short and quick solution. Is a signal into the market, and it supports the development of prices, and I'm quite sure that the next negotiation round between the Russian and the North American producers that supply more or less the Chinese market will have a very positive outcome. The price in China is an FOB price. It does not include freight, while more or less generally around the world you see prices including freight and insurance. And this is more or less the explanation for that gap of $40 that you mentioned. Yeah, and therefore there is no real let's say difference between the prices in China compared to the price level that prevailed in the time where they concluded the prices. But from then, from that point of time in the, let's say in springtime, where this price is valid for China for 1 year was negotiated and agreed upon, since then the price development in the rest of the world was different. The price rose and increased, and therefore the next price round in China needs to compensate for that other prices that have been agreed upon in other regions of the world. And since I mentioned that all these price developments are reported on daily or weekly, everybody can look into that journals and can more or less realign its own pricing policy with that. So these prices that are negotiated and agreed upon in China influence also our prices in Brazil, like you questioned. And therefore, if you look into our presentation on our website, you can see clearly that prices all over the world more or less develop in the same mood and in the same speed. And of course, we benefit as a participant in that prices also in Brazil, and if you take out the currency effect, also in Europe. So this is valid for our Southeast Asian exports, which mainly are done via containers, not by bulk shipping like the other participants in the markets, and also look to improve our position in specialty products. And we continue that. But how quick can we adjust our prices? As we have no real long-term contracts there, we follow the development of the prices set up by the market leaders. And therefore, if one goes ahead with $20 more, we can follow immediately. But of course, there is a certain drawback, as we have to fulfill the orders that have been placed with K+S, and after we have done that, we can apply the new price. So there is always a time delay of between 5 weeks or 2 months or so. This is more or less a description of the situation and of the principles that we have there. Okay.
Thank you, sir. There appear to be no further questions. Are there any further points you wish to raise?
So I do not see any further questions. Thank you for that time that you spent with us. It was a very long discussion on the telephone. I do not remember such an intensive discussion since I have been elected within the board of directors 6 or 7 years ago. Thank you for your attention. Thank you for your patience. And please keep in mind, we are on our way for the best year of the K+S history ever. And if we only look, and if we dare look into the year 2008, and if we only take up that basic effect that comes from the fact that the price level at the end of the year in the potash market are somewhat higher than the prices at the beginning of the year, this contributes without any further price increase in 2008 with a percentage of, between 5 and 7%. And therefore, we are quite optimistic for the year 2008, but we are realistic on that. This is something which is more or less mathematics, and we should not overestimate or even underestimate that effect. So once again, thank you very much for participating in the conference. Of course, we will keep in touch with you over the rest of the year. And once again, despite the development of our share price as of today, we are on a good track. We are on a way to a new record. Thank you very much, and see you later. Bye-bye.